You're listening to Richard Ellis Talks with Richard Ellis. Richard's style is very unique, where he shares the message of the gospel unlike anyone else. It's real, refreshing, focused, and fun. Whether you find yourself in a good place, maybe in a difficult place, or possibly even in a very lonely place, let me encourage you that you've come to the right place. Now, if you're not able to stick around with us for all of today's talk, you can always listen to, download, and even share this entire message with a friend right from our website, richardellistalks.com. So, with today's talk, here's Richard Ellis.
The title of today's message is Step-by-Step Parents. And obviously, we're going to talk about step-parents, and you say, well, why did I come today? It doesn't have anything to do with me. Let me kind of just make a statement before we jump into this about things you study or things you read or things you listen to or don't listen to, especially as they pertain to ministry or your spiritual life. You may hear a deal like this and say, oh, well, whatever, I'll just tune this out and wait till next time. It isn't always about you. At some point in your spiritual life, you got to get to the place and say, you know what? It's not always about me, but it is about me absorbing information that leads to some transformation in my life or somebody else's life and being better equipped at some point to say, you know what, God, this may not be about me, but I'm going to meet somebody sooner or later who's in this situation, and I need to be better equipped in a conversation as I'm praying for that person, trying to empathize or understand what's going on with them, to be able to say, you know what, I'm telling you, I don't understand what you're going through because I've never been there maybe, but let me just tell you some things that I've learned and heard and from Scripture that might help you in this situation. People are looking for answers, especially some scriptural answers, and sometimes just some practical stuff. And you, a little older, a little wiser, even though you haven't been there, need to be prepared when you have the opportunity to minister to somebody wherever they are in that situation. Let me read you a story about a physician who visited a California mental institution and asked a patient, "How did you get here? What is the nature of your illness?" He got this reply: "It started when I got married, and I guess I should never have done it. I got hitched to a widow with a grown daughter who then became my stepdaughter. My daddy came to visit us, fell in love with my lovely stepdaughter, then married her, and so my stepdaughter was now my stepmother. Soon my wife had a son who was, of course, my daddy's brother-in-law, since he is the half-brother of my stepdaughter, who is now, of course, my daddy's wife. So as I told you, when stepdaughter married my daddy, she was at once my stepmother. Now, since my new son is brother to my stepmother, he also became my uncle. As you know, my wife is my step-grandmother since she is my stepmother's mother. Don't forget that my stepmother is my stepdaughter. Remember, too, that I am my wife's grandson. But hold on just a few minutes more. You see, since I'm married to my step-grandmother, I am not only the wife's grandson and her hubby, but I am also my own grandfather. Now you can understand how I got put in this place. Now, this whole thing about being step anything and feeling like you're being stepped on in the process is some painful stuff. And couples come to see me, and I've already mentioned this before, that a couple comes to see me wanting to get married. I mean, it's a nightmare because I go at them. But when they walk in and there's a divorce situation because of the complications, all the baggage you can haul in, that's a deal in itself. But when they come in and say, we've got kids, either one of them's got one kid or more kids, and then we'll talk a little bit today about the different ages and how that can affect it. But if they've got kids, one of them or both of them, some people, and it's not a very good term to call them blended families, I call them blender families. Because it's like taking a man and a woman, throwing a bunch of kids in his blender, and you hit mix and just pray to God they survive. You know, because it's going to be ugly. It's going to be tough. It is not easy. And you say, well, but we love each other. He loves me. I love him. And our lives are going to be fixed. We're attracted to each other. We found romance. And in the midst of all our problems, this is going to fix it. It isn't going to fix it. And if you haven't thought it through and taken a long look at the challenges, you've got some shock coming. And one of the first things I'll ask one of these couples, I had one recently, and the guy's got a kid, and she's never been married and has no children. And so I looked at her, I said, let me ask you a question. I said, are you aware that if you marry this guy, and for some reason all hell breaks loose, and he's got to decide between you and his son, he's going with his son. You are aware of that. You know, and their eyes get big and look at each other and, you know, don't want to think about that. And he piped right up and said, yeah, blood's pretty thick. You got you a conversation. Now I'm like, now we're going to get somewhere. And all of a sudden, arms get crossed and people are leaning the other way. Don't touch me. You know, all this. Because some reality has hit the romance. I'm not saying it can't survive it, but you better be talking and thinking and realizing when it gets right down to it, you got some tough situation. Now, in my opinion, if you're going to marry someone, you better be sure enough about that marriage. And I'm not discounting children. The advantage that people have if you get married and have children, that you were married before the kids showed up. So you say, well, we were here before they were and the kids are important, but we are the deal. We're going to be here long after they're gone. So we're going to hold on to each other. When kids come along, a marriage splits up and you remarry, as we've described. And he says, yeah, I'd pick the son. What you're saying to the other person is, well, he's my son. You're just my wife. He's my son. You're just my husband. And if you're going into a relationship like that where the other person is just something, but really this is the deal, then you're going to have some trouble. Let me give you some statistics. 1 of 3 Americans is now a step-parent, a stepchild, a step-sibling, or some other member of a step-family. 1 in 3. Another thing, today at least 1/3 of all children in the United States are expected to live in a step family before they reach the age of 18. And you say, so why are we talking about this? Because it affects a lot of kids and a lot of moms and a lot of dads and a lot of families. I can think of more than one case of this. In one situation, a guy who had a kid and married a girl, and this girl, the stepmom now, and I mean, stepmothers aren't the greatest thing on the planet. From Cinderella, you know, kids grow up thinking a stepmom is a piece of work, right? I mean, if I am Cinderella growing up and I'm thinking about what a stepmother is, you don't want one of those because they're mean and ugly and, you know, just that's what they are. It's not a great place to start, but this stepmom gets in there with this stepdaughter and they started crossing up. And it creates friction, obviously, between the husband, because the husband's trying to juggle two women. And if the women are all a certain age, you know, if you time this just right, you got a woman going through something and a teenager going through something. Anyhow, you get all that mixing together and you've got some conflict. Well, whatever happened to all that romance? And now if that stepmom pops off and says something to my daughter, right? You can't talk to my daughter that way because you are just the husband, right? So that backs him off. All that romance and sex and whatever you think was going to go down, it ain't happening anymore because you've got war in that house. And now you're picking sides. You just better slow down is all I'm saying. And if you look at statistics, half of first marriages fail, 60-something percent of second marriages fail, and 80-something percent of third marriages fail, and the numbers don't go down after that. They keep going up. And I looked at a couple a while back who'd been married multiple times, and I said, now you're asking me to marry you. And I said, you understand, you are boarding a flight, this airline, before you buy the ticket, before you get on the plane. The announcement comes over the intercom in the waiting area, in the terminal. And I think on this case, it's the right name, terminal. You are sitting in the terminal and they come on and say, flight whatever is boarding to such and such a destination. And just a reminder that 90% of our flights crash and never make it to the destination. Please board now. How bad do you have to get where you're going to get on a plane that has a 90-something percent chance of crashing? I mean, you either got to be in love, which is a synonym for stupid, you know. You got to be brain dead, or you better be some kind of prayed up, prepared, have done your homework and thought this thing through and said, God, help me not do the wrong thing here because there's too much at stake. You are looking at pain and you may have some moments of pleasure and all this great romance. But when real life hits and blender families throw more real life into the mix than you've ever seen. And I haven't even gotten into dealing with the exes next, right? You're an ex, you got an ex. The ex meets somebody new, marries somebody else, and they got a bunch of kids. And then on all these handoffs, and who's getting them this weekend? And we booked camp for them this weekend. Then grandma's got her birthday party. We forgot, and we got to cancel camp, and you can have them Wednesday, and we get them on the weekend, and it's chaos. Somebody has said, and usually this comes out in counseling, step families come about because of a loss. You can't even be a step anything without a loss. Somebody dies, divorce, somebody just abandons you. They don't even divorce you. They just leave and you don't know where they are. But it's usually not a pleasant thing how this comes down. If you got a Bible, turn to Luke chapter 2. And I'm going to read you one of the great stories in the scripture of a step-parent and a step-child situation. And then I'm going to read you some practical things I've found, some do's and don'ts, some things that might be helpful as you're going through this process. In Luke chapter 2, and I don't know that people think of it in these terms very often, but Jesus ends up being one of the most famous stepkids on the planet. And I understand this is going to sound a little harsh, but it is the King James word for it. Jesus grew up basically a bastard. We hear the story of Jesus being born of a virgin and all these things, all these beautiful things. But you know what? Joseph was about to leave this woman because she got pregnant, and an angel showed up and talked him out of it, and he did the right thing and stayed. But from everybody else's perspective, Mary is a whatever, and Jesus is a little bastard boy. So he grew up being that kid. Who in the world is going to believe? Well, you know, I'm doing the math here, and your dad and mom didn't get married. You know, everybody wants to do the math. Have you ever noticed that? Your mom and dad got married here, and somehow you were born here. What's up with that? Well, I'm God. That's my answer. I'm God. And my dad is really God, and my mom was a virgin. You try to tell that story and get laughed out of school, you know. So you're dealing with Jesus. That's the reality of this thing. So here he is, and Joseph has got to raise this little boy and be the father in this situation. And Jesus is young enough, was a tiny baby, to know no different at a certain point, but that Joseph is his dad. And you jump in here in Luke chapter 2, verse 39. So when they had performed all these things according to the law of the Lord, they returned to Galilee to their own city, Nazareth. And the child grew and became strong in spirit, filled with wisdom, and the grace of God was upon him. Then verse 41, his parents went to Jerusalem every year at the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up to Jerusalem according to the custom of the feast. When they had finished the days, as they returned, the boy Jesus lingered behind in Jerusalem. Now he's 12. Your bar mitzvah is usually when you're 12, Jewish culture, you become a man. So he's still going to go live with his parents, but he's a man of sorts at 12. When they had finished these days, they go home then. The boy lingers, and Joseph and his mother did not know it. They didn't know an entourage, a big group going to Jerusalem for Passover. They think, you know, kind of a family caravan. He's here somewhere. They supposed, and supposing him to have been in the company, they went a day's journey and sought him among their relatives and acquaintances. Now, you think, even old school around here, 50 years ago, you didn't lock your back doors and your kids, you know, run up down the street. You didn't think about it. So we'll travel for a day. Jesus is 12. He's old enough to take care of himself. He's here. But they start thinking, well, where is he? Let's find him. So they go searching for him, and they can't find him. So now they got to go a day's journey back to Jerusalem to look for him. And you talk about panicked. You know, God entrusted his son to our family, and we lost God. I mean, what do you do then? Luckily, God knows where he is, but for a while there, you're panicked. So when they did not find him, they returned to Jerusalem seeking him. Now, so it was that after 3 days, I mean, losing your kid in the mall for 30 seconds is terrifying now. 3 days, they can't find Jesus. So you go to all the arcades. He's not in the arcades. You know, you go to all the, wherever you think he's going to be, wherever you went, wherever you stayed. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, both listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. So when they saw him, they were amazed. Now see, in my house, the amazement would have been demonstrated by this motion where that belt goes like this, and then that motion like that, and then this popping sound, just like that. Now, I know that didn't happen much, and then sometimes it got wrapped up like that, usually about that much, and then you were reading the brand of the belt on your bottom. That's what was going next. So I think it's a miracle that they're just amazed and don't just come unglued on him. So they saw him, they were amazed, and his mother said to him, "Son, why have you done this to us?" Now she's upset, and with reason. Now see, the tricky thing about this, if you're going to say that Jesus was sinless, he did the right thing. So what's she supposed to say? "Son, why have you done this to us? Look, your father and I have sought you anxiously. We traveled all the way back. For 3 days we've been looking for you, and we've been worried. We couldn't find you." That's all. They just want to know where he was. The words she used, "your father and I have sought you anxiously." And then listen to what he says. "And he said to them, 'Why did you seek me? Did you not know that I must be about my father's business. Now, he wasn't talking about Joseph. Now, you imagine how Joseph felt in that moment where the transfer is made and Jesus flat out says, you as my father, my mom looking for me, but I'm here after my father's business. Now, is he saying, Joseph, you didn't do a good job, or you're just my stepfather? Joseph must have done an extraordinary job to get him to this place. Joseph had to somehow model what being a daddy was and protect and provide and deal with all the words that would have been called out to his own wife, to Jesus, and manage that situation. Why did you seek me? Did you not know that I must be about my father's business? But they did not understand the statement which he spoke to them. It didn't make sense to him. Jesus was in the right place doing what he was supposed to be doing. He still goes back, still lives with him, still grows up, but some things are changing. Now, I think one of the greatest guys that ever lived is a man named Joseph, who had the task of being the stepfather to the Son of God, Jesus the Christ, and deal with all these kind of issues and hear something like that and maybe not understand, but handle it. Now, let me read you some very, what I think may be some maybe practical do's and don'ts, some things I found on a website dealing with step parenting, and I'm no authority on this. And you know what? I don't have any desire to be. But as sure as I'm standing here, it could happen to me. You say, well, you're being morbid. You know, let's just factor out divorce. People die. And for somebody here today, you're listening to one that has nothing to do with me, and something could change in your life because people die. And you could end up a single mom, a single dad, meet somebody else and be in the throes of this. It's just reality. You say, well, I don't want to think about that. You know what? All these little kids don't want to think about going back and forth between two houses either. They didn't ask for that. But that is their reality. And somehow we've got to communicate to them, you can live through this, you can more than survive this, and we're going to help you do it. And some of the ways to do it or not do it, see if these can be of help to anybody. You know what? Before I even do that, there was one thing that I jumped over, and I think it's important to say. It was a comment somebody made, and it's this. Children should not be used as messengers between households or as pawns in a power struggle. If you are angry with your ex-husband, your ex-wife, then get some help, sit in a room with them, and figure it out. Do not hammer that out in front of those kids, and don't use them as little messengers to go say things. Well, you tell your daddy he's nothing but about, you know, or you tell your mama. And try to hurt, you are using, you think, them as a messenger, but what you're doing is sticking the knife in your kid and saying, and by the way, pull it out when you get to mom and stick it in her. You think, well, I'm not hurting my kids. I just want them to know what a sorry son of a, you know, whatever he is. That's not helping them. It's not going to help them get through anything because you're causing them to be split. They're already split. And I know we could go into all kind of nuances and technicalities and different veins of this. Well, what about this situation? There's so many different situations. I know that. But in principle, don't use these kids. Here's some do's and don'ts. Do reassure children that the divorce or death was not their fault. Invite questions and discussion. Do start talking with your children about the possibility of blending your family long before the marriage. Be tolerant of outbursts in children when you tell them about the remarriage. Typically, they hope for reconciliation between the two biological parents. Realize children are suffering a loss during this divorce or death, and they may be vocal about not wanting this new family. Assure children that they will continue to have a relationship with the non-live-in parent. Begin a dialogue about the future family life. Mix in lots of listening so that everyone has a chance to acknowledge and mourn his loss through an open discussion of feelings. You cannot fall in love with somebody, get everybody together and say, you know what? We're all going to be happy. That's what we're going to do. And force something on them. Kids have to process. And the younger they are, birth to whatever, young, 10 years old in there, they don't mind, you know, a new parent that adds security. You get 10 to 14, you got trouble. That is the toughest window. If you're about to throw a blended family on 10 to 14 year olds, you better be paying attention. 15 and up, they're gone anyway. They don't need you as parents anyway. And they can adjust and say, you know what, I'll deal with this. They're not home. They're moving. They got friends. They're kind of on their way out. 10 to 14, pay attention. The younger ones pay attention too, because it is very difficult to go through it at any stage. Don't push your children into creating relationships. Allow bonds to evolve slowly and naturally. Give your children the time, space, and flexibility to adjust to the new situation. Don't expect your stepchildren to call you mom or dad. Let them decide what they want to call you. Not completely, because that could get out of hand. Their comfort level is important here. If they don't settle on a name easily, meet with them to mutually select a name that you are comfortable being called. Do expect and accept different feelings between parent, child, step-parent, and stepchild. Do establish a unified parenting approach that is evenly applied to everyone in the family. Create a solid bond that demonstrates stability in a sense that the new couple is in charge. Reach agreement with your new partner on how to address the important unanticipated parenting situations that arise. Introduce correct behavior from a position of this is how we do it in our family. And have some boundaries. Don't forget your marriage by focusing exclusively on the family. Make alone time with your spouse consistently. Nurture your marital relationship. Raising children is a challenge under any circumstances. Raising other people's children is a special challenge. Having a strong marriage will help you blend your families together. Do spend time alone with each child and stepchild. Do hold family meetings. Just get together and spend time together. Do establish new traditions. Figure out stuff. And by the way, it's going to take about 4, sometimes to 7 years to establish a new family unit and figure out that you've got something going with these kids and you as the stepdad or stepmom. It's not going to happen overnight because they got memories with their mom and dad and what they did growing up maybe, and you are the new kid on the block. Do respect former spouse's parenting. Make sure he has quality time with his child or children. Do avoid conflicts between the adults involved with the children when the children are present. Do invite children of other family members to milestone events such as birthdays and graduations. And don't hesitate to call on grandparents, family members, clergy, support groups to help with the adjustments. Get all the assistance you can. This is a tough subject. It is a tough life to live. And most people you meet and they got this going on, they're just making the best of it. They're just rolling with it, trying to get through it. And they're shuttling kids back and forth. And they're dealing with the ex-wife and that whole deal. And who's going to be where, when. And listening to kids say, you know what? You can't tell me to do anything. You're not my father. You're not my mother. Who do you think you are? And abusing that mom or that stepdad or that stepmom or, you know, it is a very difficult thing. Now, how are you going to survive it? I can give you all the do's and don'ts and give you statistics and suggestions. Let me tell you something. If you're not praying, you're not making it because you've already got statistical probability against you. If it's the second marriage, there's already a 60-something% chance you're not going to make it just the marriage alone. And on top of that, the children. So you better get hooked up to more than just somebody else. You better get hooked up to God and say, Father, I know this is not going to survive without you. And I don't have time to read it now, but most people read 1 Corinthians 13 as it applies to love and romance and a couple. Read it sometime as it applies to a child, a stepchild, and how you're dealing with them. Love is patient. Love is kind, long-suffering, doesn't seek its own. You say, well, I don't know who these kids are, but man, that guy married him, and that's all I'm interested in, and to heck with these kids. That's probably not what he's saying, and it's going to create some conflicts.
Before Richard comes back to wrap things up for us today, I'd like to share a couple important things with you. Let me encourage you to take a minute and check out our website, richardellistalks.com. You'll find today's talk right there on the Talks page, along with all of Richard's messages. You can even forward them to a friend so they can hear them too. You'll also find the prayer wall to add your prayer requests, a link to connect with us, the contribute page for you to be able to give to this ministry, a radio station finder, all our social media links, and much more. So check it out, richardellistalks.com. And Richard's back now to wrap up today's talk.
I haven't answered all the questions I know. And if you're in this situation and you're a stepmom, a stepdad, or about to become one, I'd develop a relationship with the real dad. And I had a guy the other day, and I'll shut it down with this. We're sitting in a men's gathering. We're talking about the challenges of this. And out of nowhere, this guy has been a Christian just for a short period of time, pipes up and he says, well, you know what? When you get right down to it, all fathers are stepfathers. And our job is to introduce them to their real father. And it got kind of quiet like it did in here. And we realized he knew what he was talking about. The most important thing you can do for those kids is live a life personally and with your new husband, new wife, where they will see Christ in that marriage no matter what the challenge and say, I don't know how they did it. They didn't do it without God, and I want a piece of that. And if you're trying to do this without him, then you better get connected to God and say, Father, I've been living my life, making my decisions. Part of the reason I'm even in this mess now or the ones I've made in the past is I didn't do it your way. I don't want to take another step without you. and I want a relationship with you so that that can change the relationship I have with my husband, my wife, my kids, my stepkids, the whole mess. You got to help me, God, or I'm not going to make it.
Thanks for listening today to Richard Ellis Talks. We're confident that the program blessed you, and we want to hear about it. One way is to give us a call and let us know. The number is 855-6-RICHARD. Another way is to drop us an email. Jump on over to our website, richardellistalks.com, and click on the Connect tab at the top. We'd love to hear from you. And while you're there at the website, there's a ton of great stuff there just for you. Things like all of the talks from Richard, a prayer wall where you can leave your prayer request, and a whole lot more. Check it out, richardellistalks.com. Finally, we love doing this program for you, but we're so grateful when you hop on board to help us with the cost. Call us at 855-6-RICHARD, or you can contribute through the website. It's easy and much appreciated. 855-6-RICHARD or richardellistalks.com. Until next time, God bless you, and thanks for listening to Richard Ellis Talks.